Hey, yo, what up? It's Forza Philip on the track, yo. It's time for Ozzy DMTG on the stream. What it do? Let's go.
It's the Ozzy D stream, MTG, slinging legacy up on the Twitch scene. We're going for the eyes, looking mince and boo. Playing all five colors, we don't have to choose. Custom EIPESTP. Parker's always in the bed because he brings the heat. Seven library, we're paying eight. We're terminuses, mama, row escapes. Dressing down opponents, oopsie, flashed ya. Streaming commentator, mage, spellcaster. Double line, tundra, endurance, matters. Fly across the world, eternal magic master. Punts on punts on punts galore. Elo punting, Ozzy hits record. Sponsor shelling out hot meals to eat. Then taxes on stream, yeah, guaranteed. He's got toast in chat, he's making toast. He's the content king, coverage the goat. Fans in chat know that he's fetching duels. Place your bets, ponder, miss, then he'll scoop. Wasteland Tiger, play Savannah. Prismatic mana, panorama. This is legacy, this ain't commander. But you're beyond his jam, let's take a gander at Ozzy D, MTG. Ozzy D's playing legacy, welcome to the stream. Would you like to reveal his hand, how it was designed in 17? This is Ozzy D playing MTG. Ozzy D's playing legacy, we got Ozzy D, MTG. Ozzy D's playing legacy, yeah, Ozzy D, MTG. Ozzy D's playing legacy, welcome to the stream. Would you like to reveal his hand, how it was designed in 17? We got Ozzy D, MTG. Ozzy D playing legacy, yeah, Ozzy D playing MTG. Ozzy D playing legacy,
What it do?
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 39 of Elo Punters. It's me, it's your boy. You missed me last time. I'm Honorog. I'm here with Bob and Daniel. High energy right now. All right, we got some stuff to talk about today, and it's the new set, Phyrexia All Will Be One. Now, I will preface this, listeners, with just a little heads up. We have no script for today. In fact, right now, I'm streaming this live, twitch.tv/unzmtg, and we're going to take questions from Twitch chat, and we're going to throw them right at you. So call this a grab bag episode if you like. But we do have some baseline things to talk about. Before we get there, though, Bob, Daniel, how's it hanging?
You know, it's going well. We don't have show notes, so you've already messed up the intro. Gotta thank our awesome editor, Phil, at Force of Phil on Twitter, Phil Bluckman. So much thanks. But yeah, I'm doing all right. I wasn't really hyped about, you know, a certain two drop that we'll get to, but I was like a little bit interested. But then after our stream that we just did, like just now, I'm like, wow, this is poop. I don't even know if I want to, you know, continue to explore this, but we'll see.
Well, I thought you were going to say it was insane and you were so excited and you couldn't believe it. It's pretty exciting because the PT is next week, so all the pros in here, everyone except for Bob, is going to be there. Audiorog's doing coverage. I'll be participant.
All right, so not going to lie, I know nothing. Where is it and what's the format?
Wait, really? You don't the Pro Tour?
I mean, I know what a Pro Tour is. I don't follow it anymore, so I don't know where it is and what the format is.
Yeah, so next week is Pro Tour Philadelphia. I'll be going, I think, Dan, you're playing, right, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm participating.
Okay, round one feature match, perhaps. I'm just kidding. And yeah, so it's Pioneer, and then there's also Draft. It's like Phyrexia Draft. So three, I think it's going to be like the standard Pro Tour format. Is there anything different about it?
A little bit. I want to say my prediction for round one feature match, it's going to probably be Nathan Stewart, if I had to guess. Onto the format. Yeah, it's a little bit different, because for the past few years, I mean, they were swapping around the PT a lot. First of all, there was they did the online PT, so like, if you go back to the last paper PT, it was the Oko one, Richmond. What was it, 2019? Eldraine just came out. And yeah, that was the last paper PT after that. And then they had the weird regional ones, if people remember that, where I think in Europe, Asia, and the Americas, they all had a regional PT, and that was Pioneer and Draft. And then after that PT, it went online. So the online ones was only constructed. There was no draft. And now that it's the paper PT again, they returned to paper. They're doing drafts again, which I'm really excited for. It's also interesting because I don't know how much people know about Magic organized play, but there's no like pro club right now. So it's kind of an interesting PT because it's kind of just like a PT, but there's like no pro points or anything. So it's kind of interesting.
So it's more like a big tournament with big prizes, yeah, but not like leading to more this doesn't help you get towards worlds, or does it?
Well, I don't know about that. There's too many numbers, but I will say one thing they did change since there's no pro points. They made it like significantly easier to requalify. So if you qualify for a PT, if you go 9-7, I believe. I don't know if that's that many rounds or
not. Yeah, the cutoff used to be 11-5, which was very difficult at the PT level. But 9-7, I mean, is still probably very difficult, but it's a little bit more. I mean, that's almost like, what, 40% of the room then?
Well, you have to day two, so I don't know how that factors into the math, because like, but yeah, it's like a pretty significant amount of people on the PT, like probably 20 or 30% more than usual, which is a lot of invites.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess that's why I haven't been following it, because, well, obviously I didn't know what's happening, but also just the fact that we haven't had one in like 3, maybe even like almost 4 years. So it definitely is exciting, and maybe I'll try to catch a little bit of coverage. You mentioned you were excited about Limited coming back. How many drafts of All Will Be One have you done so far?
I've probably done like 15 or 20-ish.
But I'm wow.
Do, okay, that's a really good amount, given that the set just came on Magic Online, what, 2 days ago?
I was doing it on Cockatrice like a week ago.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on the format? Is it, I was reading something on Twitter of it being like, super fast, and some people were, I don't know if he was just like joking, but Austin Bursevich was just saying it was the worst format ever, but what is your take?
Yeah, I saw people were having a lot of takes on Twitter. Some people were saying the format was horrible. I've heard that a bit. Some people were saying it's super, this color is super good, this color is super bad. I think the format's like pretty interesting. It's pretty complicated. I'm still trying to figure it out. Like the way I see it is that there's like, one thing I noticed is that red, green are colors that seem like people are saying are really good, but they're not very deep. So like half the red or green commons are almost like unplayable. So it's kind of like interesting compared to like, and then like the Esper cards, they're like pretty deep, but they might not be as exciting. It's interesting because they brought back poison, they brought back toxic, so the cards have infect on them, but they only do like infect to players. That's how toxic works. So it's like kind of interesting to evaluate those cards, because like they're like usually smaller creatures, because their ability only works when it hits a player, so they don't help them in combat or blocking. I think it's a pretty interesting set. I would say it's too early to like for me to have strong opinions on it, and I'm surprised like people are saying it's the worst set ever. Like it came out like 3 days ago.
Hey, but somehow you've been playing for like 2 weeks.
I would say I feel people are a bit hyperbolic about it being super aggro. Like I've been playing the format, and maybe it's a little bit aggressive, I don't know, but I feel like you have plenty of time to play long games if you want to.
Like I look at the toxic cards and it's like, yeah, half of these cards can't block, and then I mean it's easier to count to 10 than to count to 20, so it does make sense from a certain perspective that the format's pretty fast.
Well the thing is, one thing I'll say about toxic, they make the creatures small, so like a lot of the toxic creatures are kind of like weak creatures. Like it's like a 2-mana 2/2. It's like you can play a 2/3 and block it, and it doesn't like scale in the game. This is what Sam Black said. So when you think of the aggressive formats where people say, oh, you can only attack and you can't block, the reason for that is usually the creatures have a mechanic that triggers when they attack. So like exert, which you exert your creature and it does more stuff, or landfall. But this creature, these creatures, they don't actually have an extra ability when they attack that makes them bigger. It's just that they have toxic, so it actually makes blocking very good. So it's kind of like a blocking very good format. The thing that punishes it, people would say, is combat tricks, but like, I don't know. The main thing I would say is that it's hard to have a strong opinion on a format like a few days after it came out. I would say so far it seems interesting.
I don't know. I have one 3-0 that I got drafting this thing, playing red green. Jarvis backseated me the whole time, and it was pretty interesting. The red green mirrors don't seem great, but whatever. That's one thing. But okay, cool. Yeah, I'll be at the Pro Tour as well. I'll be doing production work, which is actually kind of crazy. I got an email from Wizards and they were like, hey, we've noticed what you've been doing in like the last year to do coverage. You want to show up at the Pro Tour and do some Pro Tour stuff? So they hired me as a Magic subject matter expert, which I think is really interesting. I don't know. I'm going through the whole process right now, and I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, so I'm probably just not going to say too much, but there will be a lot of other people there that I do know working in some of the similar slots. So like Carolyn Kavanaugh, and then Will Hall is another person. BJ Ogden will all be working on this stuff. It's pretty exciting.
And this is not the first time they've hired you, right? You were also helping with MTG 30?
No, that was unofficial.
Was that different?
Yeah. Atlanta?
Atlanta, I was also contracted by Wizards. So that was like the first.
Wait,
big
so what's the difference, I guess? I mean, isn't it still them hiring you?
It is different because Atlanta was like, they just were like, hey, take care of everything. And I was the one who was like running all everything. And then for the Pro Tour, there is another company that they have outsourced the production to. And the production company has hired me as a contractor for the weekend. So I'm flying out next Tuesday. And I'll be there for a week, and I'll be, it's going to be like 10-hour days, basically, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think.
Wait, but the PT is only, what, 3 days?
Yeah, but there's like prep work that needs to be done, like learn how to use the tech. And so my role specifically is like when you're watching the Pro Tour and you see like players' hands, for example, I'll be the one tracking that. So I'll basically be like looking at their hands and like writing down the cards, and they'll show up on the screen. And so I'll be very honest with you. It's not like the most wow, exciting sort of thing, but when I spoke to people who were in similar positions, they were just like, this is basically the holy grail of like getting your foot in. Doing this one thing puts your foot farther in the door than like 5 or 10 years worth of like other activities that, you know, a lot of other people do. So like, I wasn't going to say no to the opportunity. Unfortunately, like, I'll be in Japan for the next pro tour, so I don't know if I'll be able to do that one, but I'm really hoping that if I do a good enough job, maybe I can get like a ticket to Barcelona or something.
If I got that right, part of what you're doing is you're like writing down the cards in people's hands or working on the tech. So if I'm on the feature match and I'm playing Phoenix and I'm like a Zoomer spamming 100 cantrips, you have to keep writing down all my ops.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's a pretty good meme, I guess.
If you do that, I'm going to have to just like after the match, I'm going to be like, Daniel, and I'm going to punch you in the throat, you know, just straight up like
Ledger Shredder conniving pieces of the puzzle. Treasure Cruise. Cut down the Treasure Cruise quick. Yeah, I guess try and not get Phoenix on the feature match. Its hand can change quickly.
Yeah, and I also don't think like it's one of those things that will... I probably don't have to update it like every like 5 seconds or whatever, but because like I won't even be able to type cards in, but like, let's say like every 30 seconds or so, like, is what it is. It's only the hand. I don't even think it'll be on the screen like all the time, or maybe it will be. I don't know. Whatever it is. Either way, I'll learn it. That's what the training is for. And I think there's like room for compensation. But what I really want to do is go there next week and then on Wednesday and Thursday, just like vlog the experience. But I signed an NDA, so I don't know if I could do that.
Usually NDAs preclude vlogging. Yeah. But maybe read the fine print. Well, that's awesome though. Like, I've, you know, seen you working so hard, and it's good that you're being, you know, hired in a more official capacity. And it's definitely, you know, like you said, hopefully it's just the start.
But yeah, we should transition to talk about some actual Magic, because this new set that came out seems kind of like a haymaker set. It's got a couple like very few cards that are like really, really potentially good. Kind of like the old sets that we used to have, instead of like, you know, Modern Horizons 2, which has like 30 good cards. Like, it's like the one set that had Fatal Push, or the one set that had like Elvish Reclaimer. And then like, you know, we have to like sift through the mud to find it. And I think there's a lot of mud. You know, there's maybe a couple good cards as well. So why don't we start with maybe the most obvious card that everyone is talking about, Bob?
Sure, we can start with the one we were just testing with, which is Mercurial Spelldancer. It's one in a blue for a Phyrexian Rogue, which does matter a little bit. It is a 2/1 unblockable. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you add an oil counter, and then whenever it deals damage or attacks?
A combat damage. It has to deal combat damage.
All right, so yeah, whenever it deals combat damage, you may remove two oil counters. And then the next instant or sorcery spell you cast, you may copy it.
Wait, okay. Before you give me your opinion on it, I actually changed my mind, because we played a league together and I sort of know what your final conclusion might be. But I want to ask Daniel, because Daniel has been in the world of Pioneer. And what your opinion is, Daniel? Because you always have, you go off the chain when it comes to theory, right? So what do you think about Spelldancer?
I need to test more games with it. So I read, when the set came out, I read through the spoiler and I was like, oh, this seems like a really weak set. Like, not a lot of cards are good. So I missed this card. I think when I read it, it reminded me of like the 2/1, what was like the Stowaway? I don't know if you remember the Stowaway from a few sets ago. Like, there was kind of a line of like unblockable blue creatures or like Merfolk Looters. So in my head, I kind of related it to like Merfolk Looters or unblockable blue creatures. And I didn't realize that it's kind of like, if you untap Wizard, it can be extremely threatening. So I haven't played Wizard a ton. It seems pretty interesting. It seems like it's definitely can do some powerful things, and it can do a Dreadhorde Arcanist impression. So I'm definitely need to try it, but I haven't tested it a ton yet. That's my thoughts on it.
Bob, go with your opinion now. I want to hear what your actual is, because we played about 3 matches. We played against Death and Taxes. We played against Mono Black Stompy, and then we played against some sort of like rug control deck. What was your thought?
So yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we were not super pleased with the card, and we felt like most of our wins were from, you know, doing other things. That being said, that doesn't mean that this card necessarily, you know, is bad. We only played like 3 matches, sample size, you know, roughly of like, you know, 5 or 6 games. So it's still pretty new. Things can definitely change. But the biggest issue I saw with the card is how much setup it takes. Whereas Dreadhorde Arcanist, you know, you just have to be able to like have one card and then you start the ball rolling. But for this one, you really need 3 cards. And in order to be most effective, you want to be, you know, copying a spell on turn 3. And so in order to do that, then you also need to, you know, put these maybe questionable cards in your deck, like Mishra's Bauble. I guess you've been playing 4 Mishra's Baubles, but a couple of times it came up where we basically, you know, we had like a Ponder and a Spelldancer in our hand. We're like, well, do we play the Ponder turn 1? No, I guess we probably just hold it. But then on turn, you know, 2, the Spelldancer just dies. And we're like, okay, now we need a Ponder for another threat. We're, you know, a little bit behind. Same with the Mishra's Baubles. Like, usually you're trying to get that card out of your hand. But when you have Spelldancer, oh, you kind of need to hold it for another turn. And that's a turn that you might, you know, not be drawing into a Daze or a Force of Will. And Legacy, the format is just really, really fast right now. So it can be punishing to need to play all of these setup cards. And that's ultimately, you know, where this card falls short a little bit, is it needs the setup to really get rolling. And even, you know, we did have a match against Death and Taxes where we had two Spell Dancers, we were copying a couple spells. They had a Mother of Runes, so it was kind of negating the spells we were copying. But I also feel like if we had an Arcanist, that would have been kind of a faster way to, you know, get going against Mother of Runes. Then we could, like, probably have played through it. But this one just felt like it required a little bit too much setup. The other thing that they did is they Flicker Wisp our Spell Dancer, and that reset the oil counters to zero. So this card can be interacted with a little bit more easily than Arcanist, which was, oh, you just need to have access to your graveyard and you need one spell. Whereas this one, you need three spells.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing too, right? And I'm pretty happy about that, first of all. Like, I just want to go on the record and say, printing another Dreadhorde Arcanist is a big fucking mistake. There's no way they should do that, and I think they know that they didn't want to do that, so they clearly did not print Dreadhorde Arcanist, right? That being said, I will also put an asterisk on our experience together. So we played the list that we played was maybe an IMO, not ideal for Spell Dancer. We played just like a Grixis Delver deck, but we replaced the Delvers with Spell Dancers. We had a couple Snuff Outs and Lightning Bolts, and one thing that really bit us was just our mana was like really, really bad in most of the games anyways. I was not particularly impressed by that. Yesterday I played a league with just Is It Delver and I went 4-1, and in that deck Spell Dancer felt a lot better just because I wasn't having to juggle the black from Underground Sea for Snuff Out. I was always able to cast my spells, you know, whenever I wanted to, and that made a big difference. Because I think, Bob, part of the reason that we lost is because, like, you know, like that last game where we had Pyroblast pop and then we had two Underground Seas in play, like, it's just like, you know, it's kind of rough, and we didn't even fetch for the Seas. So I would say, like, I would start with Blue-Red Delver, just make the most consistent shell possible, probably cut the Delvers because there's no space for it, and then reattempt from there. In the Delver deck, again, though, I will... In the Is It deck, I would say the card was so-so, and basically... My big issue with this card is I feel like there's a trap, right? People are like, oh, you know what's going to be really good? It's going to be Mishra's Bauble and this card. And the reason I think this is a trap is because Mercurial Spelldancer has two basic things that it needs to do, right? First of all, it needs to survive and deal combat damage. That's facilitated by the unblockable, which I'll probably get back to after this, but I think unblockable is insane. But then the second thing is that you need to actually stock up on the oil counters. And then, the third thing is you need to have a payoff spell on top of that, right? So it needs to survive. You need the oil counters assembled, and then you need some sort of additional payoff, because what you use to get the oil counters will not also be copied on the stack. Unlike Dreadhorde Arcanist, which is like, you just cast a Brainstorm and you attack and you can flashback that very same Brainstorm, right? Which means a card like Mishra's Bauble is really good at getting the oil counters. And that too, like, only really, really, really good on like turn 2 and 3. But the problem with this card is that if you have Mishra's Bauble like after the fact, you don't get to copy the Mishra's Bauble with the Spell Dancer's ability. Like, it only copies instants and sorceries. So, like, that's one card in your deck that doesn't really... I feel like this card, you have to go all in on setting it up. Mishra's Bauble is not an all-in kind of card. It's, like, only half-assed there. Which is why my current theory is a card like Preordain, which is not great in 2023, but I think it is a little bit better suited for Spell Dancer. And maybe, Daniel... You know, Preordain is up your alley a little bit more. I know you like the butter smoothness of a card like Preordain, but I will also say that, well, actually I have a couple observations. First is copying Expressive Iteration with Spell Dancer was not nearly as good as I thought it would be. You just hit, like, you only have one land drop, and in Delver, I suppose you have enough cheap cards to put into play off of your iterations, but in Delver, you also don't have enough mana in play to leverage, like, two iterations in one turn, I think. So I'm a little bit dicey on that. Like, if that is your, like, if that's your nut draw, it's not even, like, that powerful. And then the second thing is, this is just at a random thought, is, like, what if you played Lotus Petal alongside Spell Dancer? That would be kind of cool.
Well, when I saw Spell Dancer, when I was first thinking of it for Pioneer, my first impression of that card was that it would be really good at its best against a non-interactive deck, so, like, combo decks. Like, if you play against Doomsday, you know, if you play against combo decks, Doomsday is a good example, because if you play against Doomsday with Spell Dancer, it's so threatening as a creature, because you could just, you know, copy Lightning Bolt and kill them. And Doomsday, they don't play, you know, a lot of interaction for it. But you could think of, like, any non-interactive deck. That's really where it's going to be at the peak at. Because when you play against a non-interactive deck, the other threats, you know, are a bit slower to kill them. But Spell Dancer is just such a fast clock. So I think, you know, that's where Spell Dancer would be at its peak. So if you play against, you know, like random, you know, fair decks with removal spells, you won't see it as, you know, as highly leveraged as against, like, when you're playing against a combo deck. Regarding Bauble, the reason I always play four Bauble is because of DRC. I'm not 100% sure not, but it also, DRC and Murktide, it makes the Murktide so cheap. Like, so many games where I just draw DRC double Bauble and I just play a Murktide on turn two, and it's just so good with Delirium. I mean, you have to play Delver a decent amount just to see how you, or DRC a decent amount to see how you feel about the Delirium on it. I just felt Bauble, basically Bauble, like, instantly gives it Delirium, and it's, like, pretty hard to get Delirium if you don't have Bauble. Preordain helps like a little bit because it's a sorcery, but the thing is you need to have a creature in your graveyard, which like you can't easily put a creature in your graveyard if you don't have Bauble, because you need four types. So if you have sorcery, land, instant, you need one other type. So what you need to get a creature in your graveyard. Like that's like not really something the deck's designed to do really. So and whereas Bauble just instantly gives you Delirium, and with initiative, getting Delirium quick super fast is useful. It's also good with Expressive Iteration because it makes your Expressive Iterations cheaper to cast. It's good with your Murktide because Murktide's like kind of expensive, but it makes like Murktide cheaper to cast.
So just to clarify, when you say iteration is cheaper to cast, you mean like getting a zero off the iteration? It's two mana instead of three?
That's what I mean. Yeah, you can also like, yeah, you can get a zero, and sometimes you might miss this line. I barely do it, but you can cast turn one Brainstorm. If you have you can go Brainstorm, put Bauble on top, cast iteration on turn two. If you have like all that lineup, it happens pretty rarely. But sometimes it does happen. And also it helps your Delver flip somewhat. Because you might think, oh, Bauble, it's like less instant in sorceries. But, you know, you play the turn one Delver, Bauble, and then it's more likely to flip with looking at the top card. It's a lot related to DRC. Like, DRC is much, much stronger when it has Delirium than when it doesn't. It's basically just, it really just varies how easy you find it to get Delirium. Personally, I find it very hard to get Delirium, as I said. So that's why I play four Bauble in my decks.
I agree. I think in my games, it was also pretty hard to get Delirium. I think my conclusion, everything that you said just now, I 100% agree with. And so that makes me think then that is true. If what you said is true and if what I said is true, then the conclusion is that maybe Spell Dancer doesn't really belong in these sort of like Delirium-esque, tempo-esque kind of decks. I was reading a tweet that Pokemoki, like Jeff White, posted, and basically Jeff said that like Spell Dancer not even close to Dreadhorde Arcanist. I think the same thing too. I wouldn't hold them in the same breath or whatever. The thing about Spell Dancer is like even after all that setup that you put in as well, if your payoff is just like copying a Ponder, or if your payoff is just like copying a Lightning Bolt, like it's just not worth it, right? Like that's just like so much effort to do so little. And then Jeff had an idea of just like, well, it doesn't copy just one or two mana spells or whatever. Like, it didn't have the same sort of restriction Dreadhorde had. You know, you could copy, like, much more expensive spells, like maybe something at three mana or something. I don't know, right? So that is a can of worms that you could possibly look into as well. Like, I mean, imagine copying, like, I don't know, Accumulated Knowledge or something like that. You know, that'd be nuts.
Well, that's still a two mana spell, but what are the? I think the problem is a lot of three mana instant sorceries aren't really playable. Like Archmage's Charm, like oh, that would be cool if you get to pull up a draw four, but most of the time the card you know just gets dazed or Pyroblast. So then we're talking about you know non blue cards. Then maybe cards like Colligan's Command, which you know maybe that would be a good shelf
painful
for it.
Painful Truths. I don't know if like that works though, because of the Prism or whatever.
Yeah, it might not work.
I don't know if it's so much setup because I haven't played with the card yet. But it's like you play it; it's really good with Daze. Like it's one thing about Daze is like turning on Daze is really powerful. And you play this on turn two; it's gonna really force them to play into Daze. And like you could play this, you passive Emmon, you play Force of Will or Daze, then you untap, you cast one Ponder, and it's already turned on, and the Ponder finds you another Ponder to copy. Like what I would say about this is it's really good at like letting you do the spam counterspell plan that Arcanist also did. Because the thing is, a lot of the other creatures in the deck, Murktide, Delver, I mean, they're pretty good with spam counter spells, obviously, but you'll run out of gas if your opponent, you know, has another removal spell. This, I mean, when I read this card, it's just like a card that if you untap with it, I do think it's like really problematic for your opponent. Like copying Ponders is really good in Legacy because the games can get so low resources, like there's so much cheap interaction, and then like once you start pulling ahead, you really make it hard on your opponent because you have the interaction, and then you also like have the card advantage going. It's like, how do they, you know, get back in? It's kind of like a baby Uro.
So on one hand, it is good with Daze because it adds the oil counter. But on the other hand, it's usually like they're using a one mana spell to kill your two drop and you can't actually Daze that.
It's more good if like they don't draw their one mana removal, I mean. Because like, for example, if like, let's say you're playing a normal game, you don't have Mercurial Dancer and they play like a random like two or three drop and then you Daze it. You're not really, you know, doing that much. So it's more good in the situation where like, they have to cast like a two or three drop and then you daze it and you have this and it's insane. And I would say it's like arguably better than like more threatening than other two drops than like Ledger Shredder, Young Pyromancer, or Sprite Dragon. Once you untap with it, it gets its advantage already, whereas a lot of creatures, like, they're a bit slower to turn the corner. I need to test this to try it, but it doesn't seem that hard to turn on to me. And it is really powerful. It's just like, imagine if your opponent untaps with this. It seems like very scary.
It has potential. And I think my preliminary conclusion is that whatever list that we have tried it in so far, these Delver-esque strategies, I don't think they're the final form. Something has to change. It might even just be like converting like one or two baubles into preordains or something small. It's just right now it feels a little bit weird, because like you have to use your brainstorms and ponders to set up the card, and then you don't have anything really left to use as payoff for the card. But then also, like, here's the thing too, right? Which is like, you still have to spend a lot of mana. The thing about Dreadhorde that really secretly made it busted was you didn't have to pay mana to flash back your one mana spell. Like, if it was just Dreadhorde and you had to pay mana to buy your Brainstorm back, probably wouldn't have been that as good. I don't know. This card requires a lot of resources. And then to Bob's point earlier is like, Dreadhorde was also in a format where we didn't have like as many numbers of Hydro Blast. We didn't have cards like Prismatic Ending. We didn't have cards like Endurance. And so who knows? Like, you know, I'm not willing to find out, but like, if Dreadhorde may not be that great in this current, you know, metagame, and like, if it's not that great, which it probably is, but like, Spelldancer is like definitely like tiers below the card. So
Spelldancer still cheats on the mana, because I mean, you have to pay mana to cast the initial spell, but the copy is free, so it's still making free spells to a degree. The thing that was so good with the Dreadhorde is that if you untap with it once, it's so punishing for your opponent. And this definitely has a similar play pattern where it's just like, there's not that many other two drops that you can think about. It's like a Dark Confidant, basically, that are like that punishing to untap with. And then with like the Force of Will days, a lot of times like your opponent can't do anything. It's just untap with it. And also you could play like, if you I think Delver would be good along with this, because you play turn one Delver, and then if they like try and use removal on Dancer, then they can't use it on the Delver. Also, one thing about Gasps, I'm on a Wasteland boycott. I refuse to play Wasteland, so I always have so much gas. I got, because I don't play any Wastelands in my deck, so you know that might be the sauce.
How many mana sources are you playing?
I've been playing about 16 lands. I've been trying this Mystic. I shouldn't say it. People might try it and work it against me, but I've been trying a Mystic Sanctuary sideboard for the
dude,
grind.
Yeah,
game.
No, I agree. Two Mystic Sanctuary in your 75 is nuts. I was playing three in Yorion, and then I was like, the only card that I care about in my Yorion deck that I can't play in a 60 card deck is Mystic Sanctuary. So I built a 60 card deck that had two Mystic Sanctuaries, because that is like the most broken land. Probably, maybe, okay, maybe it's egregious to say that it's more broken than Wasteland, but like, it's really, really freaking good.
I mean, it's an insane card. I just noticed when I was playing the Delver Mirrors, other people play it, the games get really grindy. Like, if people don't kill each other, because everybody has interaction, the games just go on and on. And then it's just all about iteration, sanctuary back your iteration. Or even sometimes you want to sanctuary back a Pyroblast. Like, it's just basically you're going to hit your land drop. So I just put a second sanctuary for now. But yeah, 16 lands. I like the no. So if you play no Wasteland, you'll have more blue lands and blue spells to cast. So it's a good synergy with Dancer to not play Wasteland, because then it's easier to set.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see just playing. You could play four Bauble and then two Preordain. I don't know if that's like too much air, but that's one way to just, you know, have that consistency, which is maybe a little bit what this card is demanding.
Y'all both just like completely skipped over what I was saying earlier, though. What about Lotus Petal?
Well, so the problem with Lotus Petal is, are you using to cast it, or are you using it to get like an Illo counter afterwards?
Both. Honestly, I think Lotus Petal is so insanely good right now in Legacy because the format is so fast.
I don't know what to think of Lotus Petal. It could be good. It reminds me back when Luris was legal and people were playing Lotus Petal with it. I mean, Lotus Petal seems like it could be pretty good against Initiative. So yeah, it could be interesting. I'm not sure what to think about Lotus Petal, because you have to weigh Lotus Petal versus just like playing your land drops. And you probably got the idea. So I saw some control people had Lotus Petal to ramp their mints. It's just like, if you have Lotus Petal, it's like kind of saying, I don't have a better idea of like interaction to bridge the gap to cast my spells, kind of.
The theory was literally like, so for the theory of Lotus Petal in control was like, all right, Initiative makes plays on turn one. Delver is surprisingly fast, because if you don't counter Expressive Iteration on turn two or something like that, you're just dead. And it snowballs much later, but you died on turn two when the iteration resolves. So like, speed up your own game playing control by adding Lotus Petals. And like, turn, and like, even Marcus, who was playing this Esper Kitten deck, was like, Lotus Petal is insane in this deck. You get to go like turn one Baleful Strix against Initiative. You get to go to turn two Teferi against other decks. It's actually, I don't know. And then, so I was wondering, well, like, what if like the best deck, like Delver, just like puts Lotus Petal in its deck too, if everyone else is trying to speed up, like it continues to speed up as well. So
I don't like it, because I feel like your deck is already so low to the ground and it can be a dead draw.
I don't feel like our deck felt low to the ground. The one that we played today, like, it did not. It felt like clunky. It felt like it was like tripping over itself. Like,
I could see it partly just because like Iteration Sanctuary is just so powerful that it's like maybe it's hard to run out of cards and it's more important to just have.
Yeah, that's the theory too, right? It was just like you have so many resources that draw like recoup your card disadvantage. So at least in control, my thought process, like, you have Uro, you have Minsk and Boo to draw a bunch of cards, and you also have Expressive Iteration. The same thing kind of applies to Delver as well, because you still have those card advantage tools. And
after this next league, do a Lotus Petal league, and then you'll be like, huh, this card doesn't always do what I want it to. Fair. It's like, what if you draw it with, like, you know, DRC or Murktide? It's like, it does a little bit, but you really want to be drawing with the Spell Dancer.
Sure. I mean, it's probably a bad top deck in certain situations, but anyways, next card, or do we have any final thoughts on this card, or can we move on to the next one?
Copy some Time Walks and Pioneer.
Yeah, Temporal Trespass, right? That's what someone suggested. But
Or Treasure Cruise, I'll take either.
Actually, it's not Skrelv. That is definitely on my radar. I have three cards that I want to talk about, all of which are one mana spells, and I guarantee, Bob, you have not seen one of these cards. So we'll start with the ones that you probably have seen. The card that I was most hyped up for out of the set, which I have yet to sort of like figure out in my mind, but I promise I'll get there, is Minor Misstep. Gut reaction, Bob, Daniel, what do you think about these cards? One word, like, you get two words. Okay, Daniel?
To be determined, what is it, role maker? Is that the right word? I don't know.
Role player
can be decent. Decent against one drops.
That's my sort of take in it as well. I think this card is phenomenal for control decks. Like, if you were trying to play control in Legacy, this card is so good because it just, like, okay, honestly, like, in a vacuum, counter spells are never like really, really that good unless they're like Daze, which is like trading on mana, or like Force, which is trading on mana and is just generically applicable. This card, it applies to everything in Legacy. Name a deck that doesn't have a one or a zero mana spell, like, where this is actually dead. You won't have an answer for it. Okay, against like Ancient Tomb, it's not great. You set it out in that matchup. But like, even against decks like Maverick, like Doomsday, being able to... Dude, I countered a Veil of Summer the other day, and I was just like, graphic description here. I'm not going to talk about it, but it was actually just insane, right? Like, those are the kinds of things that I'm particularly interested in. The fact that Control just hasn't had like good counter spells to play in a long, long time. Like, you have Force of Will, but Force of Negation kind of sucks. Minor Misstep is a counterspell that I would argue is good against Delver, and then is good against like a majority of the format. Makes me really happy. Also means a couple things too. First off, that you get to play Snapcaster again. I've always thought in my mind Snapcaster is only really playable when your one mana spells are great to flash back at instant speed. Swords to Plowshares, simply not enough. I think Minor Misstep does make it reach like the next level, which then requires you to build a control deck that really builds around that sort of Drago instant speed style, aka it would not be in a four color deck. Unfortunately, I have not been able to test this because the most important card for the Drago style control deck is not out on Magic Online, and that is Triumph of St. Catherine. So once Triumph of St. Catherine comes out in about Q2 2023, I think this is what Magic Online Twitter has disclosed, best believe I will be putting those cards together. Like, I think it's going to be so awesome. I will also give a caveat, which is, and I know I'm like monologuing here, but just, you know, thank you for bearing with me. Minor Misstep does not work in a deck that does not make oodles and noodles and woodles of like card advantage. Trading one for one is only so good. You also need to be using it in a way that develops your card advantage or your other engines at the same time, which is why I think Minor Misstep is so good, because it does exactly that, right? It protects your predicts, it protects your draw spells, it protects your planeswalkers, all while also being a great defensive spell in slowing down like a Delver Secrets or like an Elvish Reclaimer or like a Thoughtseize or something like that, right? So like it's a role player. I think that's the greatest way to put it. Fills a couple holes, allows you to go turn one, pass, and then it's a removal spell, a pseudo removal spell that pitches to Force of Will as well. Convoluted if you think about it, but it does make sense when you pair it with in the right deck. I think it's going to be insane.
Are you playing Accumulated Knowledge in this deck?
I don't know quite yet, because I tried a Jeskai deck that only had Expressive Iteration as the card advantage spell, and I didn't feel like that was enough card advantage. There were after GP Reduke, where I almost got canceled. I was playing this build of miracles that was like 4 AK and then like 2 or 3 predict, and that's the kind of like air I'm talking about, right? You want to have a lot of air in your deck. Like, it works out. I think it works out eventually. You have a lot of good catch-up mechanics, a good stabilization tools like Terminus and St. Catherine.
Well, the first deck when I saw this card that excited me to counter against was Elves. I don't know if you also have the Elves hatred. You love killing those little green guys.
I do.
If it's like, I like squishing them like elves. Bugs. When I see a fork bolt, it gives me the same feel. It's like, It's like the same feeling as squishing bugs, though I guess squishing bugs isn't really something fun to do. But anyway, yeah, it seems so good against elves. I mean, I know they have that freaky uncountable stuff, but like Glimpse of Nature, like just Wirewood Symbiote, and just like making their Gaia's Cradle, you know what I mean? Like just one for one-ing them is so good. And also, yeah, it's pretty versatile. Like, have you protected like an Uro from a Surgical, you know what I mean? Like it hits a lot of stuff. It seems pretty, you know, decent to me. It's just like, it also like, I was thinking, it counters so many stuff that counter spells normally can't counter. Like, it counters Swords to Plowshares for one mana, Surgical for one mana, like all those elves. Like, there's just not that many counters. It counters a lot of stuff that you haven't seen for one mana before, which will be interesting. And especially when you're trying to break up your opponent's synergy or protect your threat, that's when it'll be at its best. Because, like, usually there aren't great ways to counter swords or whatever, so.
Well, I was actually thinking about this, too. I don't know if it really belongs in Delver. And the reason I don't think it belongs in Delver is because of what you said, Daniel, a long time ago, which is, like, the way you like to play Delver right now is sort of just, like, this, like, tap-out kind of deck that just, like, you know, has, like, only the most powerful spells. And I feel like holding up one mana, I mean, maybe it's good against, like, Carpet of Flowers. Maybe that's another thing that really makes you go, ooh la la. But, like it's really tough to just, like, hold up mana in a majority of matchups. It's obviously going to be good against control because you can counter swords and things like that, but like I don't know about the rest of the world, but in Delver, yeah, just it's not exactly the same because you're not trying to control everything. You're trying to find that nice balance, whereas in control, I mean, it's self-explanatory, right? You are
in Delver when you're trying to break up your opponent's synergy. Like if you play against combo decks, it seems like it could be mm-hmm. pretty, like, not insane, but it just like if you play against Reanimator or Doomsday or Storm, it trades for a lot of their cards. And if you play against, like, like, elves, it just, like, it can help, like, I don't know if it'll see play, but it could be, like, you could play a couple in the sideboard, and when you play against a lot of, like, fast decks, you might, you know, side it in to slow them down, side it in against control. I don't mm-hmm. see it, like, as a main deck card, like, you just main deck it. I just see you play a couple in the sideboard, and when you play against a lot of decks it's live in, it'll help you, like, it'll just be, like, help, I don't know, break apart the synergy in their draw. Especially, like you said, there's not a lot of good counter spells, so it's actually kind of hard. It can be hard to break apart the synergy of your opponent because you don't have that many great options. And with Iteration, that's a good payoff in Delver. Like you said, Iteration was enough in control, but Delver has DRC and Iteration. So Dragon Rage Channeler is kind of like more iterations because it finds you the card advantage. That's how I see it in Delver.
That is kind of interesting. I mean, maybe that does make it a little bit more, because if you don't need it, then you could always bid it. And then if you do need it, you get closer to finding it, that kind of thing. Delver is probably the best iteration deck just because it's lower to the ground, which means it gets to iterate first, and that would create a snowball effect. So in theory, you could maybe play it in there. I just like that it counters so much stuff that, like, before I would have lots of problems with, right? Like, if you look at, for example, great example here, right? Ready? So Brian Cookie has been playing, you know, the Epic Storm for God knows how long, and recently he swapped over from Veil of Summer back to Silence, and those are both two categories of cards that are very, very hard to interact with because they don't get pyroblasted, and if you force will them, well, I mean, then you're down a forcible, and that was like the whole thing that they were trying to stop with the Veil of Summer anyways, or the Silence. So like having a one mana counterspell that trades with that card, and keep in mind these decks, there are a lot of decks where like you can't just Flusterstorm those kind of cards either, right? You just need a hard counter. That's where this card shines. It does solve a couple problems, or even like being able to stop like a Glimpse of Nature. Like, I'm with you on that one, brother. Like, that is the nuts, right?
You know those dirty Wirewood Symbiotes where they're just going to return a Visionary for value.
Yeah, that too, right? But I don't know, that's my take on it. I think it's right now, until I haven't really dedicated much thought or energy to building it, but I think it's still an insane card, and the best list for it will probably be some sort of like Jeskai, St. Catherine, instant speed flash deck that will, I'm just like watering at the thought
is
of it, like,
dead?
Like drooling.
Uro dead.
Well, no, I'm not saying Uro's dead. Uro's just like some other, it's completely like, it's a different thing. You know, let's not jump to conclusions here, Daniel. I'm just saying, I think it'd be good in Jeskai, and Jeskai would be super sweet, but you have to play like a lot of like cards that people generally don't like Predict and like things like that.
Over Uro and Minskinboo?
Or like Mystic Sanctuary and Thwart. I don't know. You know, like,
I don't even know what Thwart does. Now I need to.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. That was my first card. I have another card. Are you ready for it? It's Skrelv Defector Might. Have you seen that card?
Oh yeah, I've seen it around town. It's all over the place.
Bob,
is it good in Limited?
And people have been playing a lot in Pioneer. I think even maybe in Modern a little bit. Mostly in Pioneer, because in Legacy you have like Mother of Runes and some other similar effects to it a little bit, but. in Pioneer, there was never a Mother of Runes, so it's people are trying it a lot. I'm seeing it a ton in leagues. But what about Legacy?
What's your take on it, Bob?
Well, I think you have a take, so I want to hear yours, I guess.
I think this card is busted in Infect. I think it's so good. People are like, oh, but why don't you just play Mother of Runes in Infect? It's just not the fucking same, man. For two things, right? Like, syntactually. Like, if you think about it syntactually. First things first. I played a league with Sam Danz, a.k.a. Fenris Cloud. We played three matches together. We 3-0'd the ever-loving shit out of everything. And then I played two solo. I won one and I lost one. I lost to Mono White, the end boss, going for the 5-0. This card is just fantastic. Okay, it does most of what Mother of Runes does. But there are a couple nuances. The first one is that it doesn't give protection. It only gives hexproof and a pseudo unblockable, right? Like those two aspects of protection get thrown onto whatever creature you are quote unquote protecting. But the reason hexproof is important is because like it allows you to also use your pump spells in the same turn that you're activating your Defector Mite. So it's not very likely, but let's say there's a world where like, you know, you use Mother of Runes to give your creature protection. If your pump spell is for some reason on the stack and you have to name green, then, you know, it's a very small thing, but still. Okay, Matt, that's one cool thing. The most important thing, though, is that this motherfucker has Toxic, which is so relevant. I played against Show and Tell, and like I literally attacked with it twice, put a Show and Tell, the Blighted Agent, into play, and then like pumped the Blighted Agent to attack for lethal, which I could not have done if it was Mother of Runes, right? The Toxic is really important. That's just, it is an on-theme Mother of Runes. Maybe not exactly the same, but it is close enough, and attacking is just relevant. It just is. It does suck that it is legendary, but like still, I think it's really good for Infect. Also lets you just play the hyper. You know, it's interesting because people were talking about like Venerated Rot Priest, which is actually my fourth card. Sam was telling me that Rot Priest doesn't make the pass in Legacy Infect because it's a bit too all in, right? Like if you're playing Delver and your opponent goes like Rot Priest, target, 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 you just get to kill the Rot Priest at your leisure because you have so much interaction. Skrelv allows you to play slower, more calculated games where you get to leverage your play skill by... When you expand games out, I think you do leverage more skill because games are longer, you have more decisions to make, and I think this card allows you to do this. So the better you are at Infect, this card just like it starts to shine, right? We just got to play slower games, and he said it's been very, very good against Delver.
What about Skrelv's Hive? That's another card I saw him playing, and that one looks interesting to me as well.
Oh, yeah.
So this one is one in a white for an enchantment. It's basically the white Bitter Blossom. During your upkeep, you lose one life, and you create a 1/1 colorless might artifact with Toxic 1 and this creature can't block. And then as long as your opponent has 3 or more poison counters, your creatures with Toxic have lifelink. So I guess that kind of nullifies the life loss somewhat, so you can kind of catch back up. But it seems like another way to go wide, if you will, which I guess the Infect deck never really had before. Before, like, the one big thing against Infect was like, oh, you just point and click their and kill their creatures. But when this is out, like, they will always have some creatures.
Yeah, I think there are a couple upsides and downsides to this card. So the first is not being able to block is a big deal. I think it's a really big deal. But then again, like, I think in the matchups, well, rather, I think that does dictate what kind of matchups you are allowed to bring this card in against. I think, for example, I would really like it against Initiative, and I would really like it against Control, just putting bodies into play. Although, because Infect isn't really as controlling as, like, Control, for example, maybe it's actually not that good against Initiative, since it's just a 1-1. The other thing, too, is that Toxic is very different from, like, the Infect mechanic, as Daniel had alluded to earlier. They're just not the same, right? This creature deals combat damage based on its stats, but then Toxic X goes on the on the stack like a trigger, and then you apply X poison counters based on that, right? So you could make this a 10-10, and you would still only deal one poison counter's worth of damage. The downside of not being able to block means that its use case is very specific. Something to think about is that in the Infect deck specifically, like, when are you not going to have your opponent at 3 or more Infect, right? So lifelink is probably almost always going to be on, which is, I don't know, it's kind of cool. I think it's a new tool for Infect specifically that could be good. I thought about playing it in Control as a white Bitter Blossom, an on-color Bitter Blossom, but a lot of people are just, like, all my trusty four-color colleagues were like, this card sucks. So, I don't know. It's worth testing, but... yeah, we'll see. The other card that I wanted to talk about, so we briefly mentioned Venerated Rot Priest, which apparently is taking over Modern right now. I've seen a lot of screenshots of like turn two kills with like Venerated Rot Priest and what is it? Ground Rift? Is that the card?
Yeah, that sounds like the card, the Storm card.
Yeah, right? Like people are going like Mutagenic Growth, And then ground rifting their rot priest to deal a bunch of infect damage or whatever. It's kind of cringe, I'm not gonna lie. But here's a card that I know for a fact that you, neither of you, actually maybe Daniel has seen it, but I know for a fact Bob has not seen it. It's a single red mana for Vindictive Flamestoker. Oh, was I right, Bob? Have you heard of this card?
No, I'm reading it now.
Yeah. So single red for a 1/2. It's a Phyrexian Wizard. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put an oil counter on Vindictive Flamestoker, so kind of like Spelldancer, and then it's 6 and a red, sacrifice Vindictive Flamestoker to discard your hand, then draw 4 cards. This ability costs 1 less to cast or to activate for each oil counter on Vindictive Flamestoker. So it's 7 mana to activate, and then every time you cast a non-creature spell, you reduce that cost up to 6 is the maximum cost reduction. This card is Legacy playable. Agree or disagree?
How are we defining playable here?
Playable as in the trophy leader now has 3 copies in their deck.
What? Does they have a deck?
Interesting. I was going to say, I would believe that I could 5-0 a league, but I don't know if I believe that it's good, but hey, tell me why I'm wrong.
All right. So this is a deck that you and I have lost to plenty of times before, me especially, but you know Killaby, right? Killaby plays one deck, and that is the Riddlesmith Containment Construct deck. And this card has apparently found a home in this deck. And I think if you think about it, right, like, kind of makes sense. Oh, shit, there's another card that we haven't talked about. That's Micah's. Yeah, you're constantly playing your zero mana artifacts, and then you have Lion's Eye Diamond to also help give a little bit of mana boost when you don't need to. And then when you have Containment Construct in play as well, like, this card is really good, which is probably going to take us to the next conversation of topic, which is Mycosynth Gardens, which is another card that is ruining Modern. As far as I can tell, everyone's like, oh no, it's like Amulet meta, Amulet Winter or something. They're always like that. It's never like that. So I don't know. Mycosynth Gardens in Legacy. Bob?
I think it's a really powerful card, but I need to see it more in action. Like, everything people have described with it is just like a little bit too cute for now. But maybe it's just powerful enough to have your land like become any artifact. Like, that's just straight up powerful. So jury's still out for me.
Okay. What do you feel? We had this conversation briefly where we were talking about a certain companion that you had a lot of passion for, and you kind of shut down my idea, but why don't you give me the 411 on how this would work with something like Garuda?
So yes, this probably gets you in more situations when you have double LED, but that's not the problem anymore. The problem is you need like triple LED mana because of the companion nerf. I think without companion being nerfed, like, this card would like really put Garuda over the edge. Although I guess maybe it was already problematic before, but the most powerful play pattern was just like, you know, playing LED and then playing a second LED, and then your opponents would be like, oh god, do they have the cavern or not? Maybe I'm supposed to force this LED. And that's why it was so difficult to play against. But now, like, if you're trying to cavern out a Garuda through the 3 cost nerf, like, it's just really, really hard, and there's no realistic way to do it on like turn 2. You need like double LED plus pedal. And so this helps a little bit, but I still don't think it's easy to do. Plus, Mycosynth Gardens is a land, so that also...
Wait, why would you need double LED plus pedal?
Because if you're playing Mycosynth Gardens plus LED, then you still need, like, another 3-mana thing.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. But, it, like, it's not impossible to get... Like, what about, like, Garuda as a turn 2 play? Is that bad?
No, that's literally what I said. On turn 2, need double LED, Gardens... Cavern, that's just too many cards. Like, it's not reasonable. Yeah, I mean, turn 3 maybe gets a little bit easier, but yeah, Mycosynth Gardens is a land, Cavern is a land, so it's just kind of hard to do the broken thing. And then if you're not doing it in the same turn, then you get vulnerable to Wasteland as well. So yeah, it just doesn't really work, in my opinion.
Okay, all right, I'm gonna have to try this out, because I think, you know what, now you've incentivized me, I might try Garuda right now. If somebody at home wanted to try this list, what is your first thought? How would you like build this deck? Would you just copy and paste the same deck that you had like during your companion era, and then like just throw 4 random Mycosynth Gardens in there, or would you do something different? Because I'll be honest, I'm asking for me, so I can build a deck after this podcast is done recording, and then we could try it out.
Wow, you're like, yeah, I'm not gonna test Lotus Petal anymore. I just want to lose some tickets with Garuda.
I'm down.
That is your prerogative, but I think you can just. Honestly, you could do that, and that would be close enough. I think the main thing, they've printed a couple better clones recently, but I can't for the life of me remember what they're called. So you'd have to go do some digging, but honestly, it's probably not going to make a big deal, make a big difference rather, because I think it's going to be hard for you to get the Garuda into play. I'm also trying to think, like, do we want Grim Monoliths? I always felt like that was kind of an all-in card, but maybe you just need it now because of, I think you probably just want the Grim Monoliths because it's another way to, you know, play the Garuda turn two.
Notably, though, Grim Monolith and Mycosynth Gardens do not play well together.
Meaning, like, you can't really copy it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but I think it's more just using the Grim Monolith to put the Garuda in your hand.
All right, I see. Because I'm looking at one of your old lists that was in an old SCG article, and you have Grim Monolith in the sideboard. What?
Yeah, no, I had it in the sideboard for the Goldfish matchups where you're just trying to, like, find it and cast it as soon as you could.
Okay.
But I don't actually think it's, like, that necessary.
Okay. I think the other card that people were looking to copy with this is, like, Phyrexian Dreadnought. And I'm assuming that you think that's too cute.
No, actually, that would be more interesting to me. I just don't think Garuda makes sense because you need so many cards to make it work, and you can't do it on turn one.
Bet.
And that was when the deck was busted.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, plus you're just making yourself weak to, like, too many cards. Like, even when I played that deck before, it was, like, anytime you had to, like, you know, not do a turn one Garuda, then you better be doing a turn one Chalice or something because you were just, you know, you're weak to Pyroblast. And, like, yeah, just imagine, you know, playing, passing the turn, and they just hold Pyroblast up. It's not a good feeling.
Fine. I'm going to try it. I'm going to lose some tickets, and then I'll move on from there. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we need to address, like any major cards. Chat, help me out here. If there are any cards that I'm missing right now from the new set that really do deserve something to be talked about. But I think for
the Atraxa, we talked about it on the last pod, which you were not on.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's pretty good. This is the new 7-drop that's like a pseudo Grizzlebrand. It basically, you flip the top 10 cards of your library and you get one card of each type. You know, while it's not really a draw 7, it's probably a draw 4, maybe even like a draw 5 or 6.
Is that really good? I played against, do you know Wing Zero on Magic Online, the show and tell player?
Mm-hmm. They had it?
Yeah, they had it and they never put it into play and they always pitched it to Force of Will and I was like, eh.
I was going to say, like, that is the cute thing about it is it pitches well to Force of Will, Grief, Force of Vigor. So that is a significant advantage over the other, you know, combo creatures.
Mm. And then I think Fish Duggery, another notable four-color player, 5-0'd twice with Atraxa in the Yorion Green Sun Zenith deck, the Blue Zenith deck, which was, yeah, okay. It's a thing that you can do, but I don't know if it's, like, crazy
like,
great.
Like, is it better than, like, Primeval Titan? Like, I don't know how much costing one more matters when you're already at 6, but maybe it could still matter.
Yeah, so that's something fascinating. And then I see chats talking about, like, Tyvar, the new Planeswalker that enables, like, Hermit Druid in Vintage and, like, Devoted Druid in Modern. Does that have a home in Legacy?
I don't think so, just because... Well, okay, so Tyvar changes the math a little bit because those decks are usually so weak to removal, and, they, like, Druid costs 2 mana, but I don't know. I guess Tyvar itself costs 3 mana, so...
I mean,
probably
what
not.
Decks would, okay. would it be in a new deck? Is it good enough for elves?
You play it in the Devoted Druid plus the, I forget the 1 mana enchantment that turns it into a vehicle or something.
Talk about Luxior or whatever, or something like that. I don't know what it is either. I'm not a modern player. Luxior.
No, the card's not in modern.
It's not?
No, I'm talking about the card that turns your Devoted Druid into a vehicle, but I'm blanking on the name.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I know it's like 1 mana, right? Like the card that people are like, it's going to be Swords to Plowshares number 2.
It is a newsflash. It is not Swords to Plowshares number 2.
Whatever it is. That is true. I know what you're talking about. Swift Reconfiguration. Thank you, PB. I appreciate that. Yeah. Swift Reconfiguration. I mean, yeah, I guess you could. Yeah, that's actually kind of interesting. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be great just because it's 3 mana, but adding redundancy to a vulnerable combo. I'll leave it to Jax, our favorite Italian, to sort of figure that, our favorite combo Italian. I guess people will get mad at me if I say Mengu's not our favorite. Actually, you know what? Never mind. Too deep. I'll leave it to Jax to come up with a good deck list there for that one, because that is certainly a puzzle. In that case, I think that's a good peripheral glance at, like, Phyrexia. We'll see what happens in the next few weeks. My leading suspicion is that Spelldancer is going to flub, Misstep is going to be great, and the rest of the cards I just don't care about. But I think so it's funny because in all of this conclusion, I was like, before the stream today, I had put in an order for 4 Japanese Mercurial Spelldancers, and I told myself, wait a minute, before I click purchase, I'm going to play this league with Bob. I'm going to have this discussion with the two of you. And then I'm going to go back to this. Now that I've done all of that, here's my final verdict. I will not be spending $80 on these cards. I'm going to wait for the price to go down because I almost certainly think that's going to happen. Minor misstep, though. That one's already climbed up from $1 to $2, so I'm pretty stoked. All right, we got nothing else to do here. We will catch up with you all later, but from now, it's going to be me, Bob, and Daniel. We're going to be tuning out. I'll see you all at the Pro Tour. Daniel, I'll see you there too. Bye, guys.